crossing her arms. Besides, you're drunk. I've only managed to get a buzz since someone keeps stealing my beers, Nick said. At least we know where this one is, Vince said, pointing at Alice. Has anyone seen the rest of the girls?
I've kept an eye on them, Thomas assured him. They're over near the bus, milling with the rest of the group.
That seems safe enough. And Alex? Vince asked.
Last I saw, he was still hanging around that Selena girl, Thomas said.
Good for him, Nick said. That girl is hot with a capital sex.
That doesn't even make sense. And you can't say stuff like that anyway. You're a bound man now. You and Bubbles keep going out together,
Alice said. Normally, she would have done a much better job keeping the spite out of her voice. Bubbles is great, but the day I stop appreciating the female form in all its splendor is the day they're laying me in the ground. And even then, I'm not making any promises, Nick shot back, ignoring her tone.
You're such a goddamned asshole.
Alice swayed herself to a standing position and began wobbling off into the woods at a brisk pace. The boys stood uncertain for a few seconds, trying to comprehend her reaction.
Huh. I didn't think it was that bad, Nick said. I figured at most she'd punch me in the arm.
That did seem to be a bit of an overreaction, Vince agreed. I mean, in comparison to the stuff you normally say, that was pretty tame.
I think perhaps both of you missed the crux of that situation, Thomas said. Regardless, she seems to be getting away from camp without slowing, so it might be a good idea to go after her.
You guys have fun with that, Nick said. If I chase her down today, I'll be filling out a domestic abuse complaint tomorrow. Not sure why she only hits me.
You do the most to provoke it, Vince said. But that's fine. You get some food working. It will be dark pretty soon, and everyone will be hungry. Thomas and I will go make sure Alice is okay.
Oh, it is fucking go time!
That declaration was launched in the audible tenor of Stella Hawkins. Her voice was thick with fury, and emanating from the collective area near the bus.
Or we'll go find out what's going on before Stella seriously hurts someone, Thomas amended, immediately dashing over to the area.
Crap, there are a lot of people milling around. This might be bad, Vince noticed. I should go help Thomas. Nick, do you mind? Nick was already on his feet, producing a flashlight and a compass from his bag.
No, I get it. If there's a super throwdown, you and Thomas can help keep the peace. That means the calm down the drunken princess mission falls to the guy without astounding powers.
Your powers are very astounding, Vince told him, just not in this particular venue. I think they're well suited to your task, though. Talking down Alice will require a little bit of luck.
Saints preserve us, Nick said.
The two boys parted in separate directions, Nick heading north, and Vince just over to the buses. The crowd at the buses was thick and difficult to cut through. Their intoxication and fascination with any altercation made the situation even more troublesome. Thomas had handled this hurdle by conjuring a wedge out of orange energy and plowing right through. Vince, on the other hand, was left with slipping through slowly, apologizing as he went. Finally, he made it to the front. The sight that met his eyes was one of Roy Daniels and Stella Hawkins, both a foot or so off the ground, cocooned in a familiar orange glow. Thomas stood in the center, sweat beginning to materialize on his face. This had to be a heavy burden for him, especially as both captives struggled violently.
You two need to calm down, Thomas said, his breath broken by effort.
It wouldn't have been so bad if Stella hadn't shifted, but a girl made entirely of steel was considerably heavier than one made of flesh.
"Fuck that! Put me down, Thomas!" Stella yelled.
"Let the lady come get her licking,"
Roy agreed, flexing against his own bands. The next voice that pierced the fray was neither of the three. It came from the back of the crowd and parted it like a 1950s haircut.
"I agree. Let them both down," said Angela.
She stepped forward effortlessly, a peaceful air surrounding her as she entered the chaotic fray.
"They won't be attacking one another until I find out what happened."
"You... sure?"
Thomas grunted. A wide, gentle smile slid across Angela's face.
"They will behave. That is a promise."
124. Nick clicked on his flashlight and grumbled to himself. The girl had been less than a minute ahead of him, and yet he'd already lost sight of Alice. It wouldn't have been so bad if not for the quickly diminishing rays of sun and Nick's lack of wilderness knowledge. He'd had extensive training in so many areas, but not surprisingly, they'd skimped a bit on what to do in the woods. For a syndicate in Vegas, it was assumed that if you were getting dumped in the forest, you were no longer in a position to navigate your way home, or anywhere else, for that matter. The trees were doing a marvelous job obscuring what little light was left, their long shadows and thick foliage darkening the path at every step. Nick was aware that the farther he went, the harder it would be to find his way back, to the point where another search party might be formed to find him. Still, the fear of being hopelessly turned around in the woods was not at the forefront of worry on Nick Campbell's mind. Something was wrong in his head. He couldn't put a finger on it, but he knew something was amiss. He'd watched his alcohol intake carefully, and over this amount of time he knew how he should be feeling. A slight mellow, with no impairment of judgment. Instead, he was feeling increasingly relaxed, despite the danger of his situation. There was something else ticking through his synapses, too. It was difficult to describe. However, if he had to take a guess, Nick would have called it giddiness. It was an unwelcome guest in his cranial space, yet the longer it remained, the harder it was to remember why he disliked it. Something was amiss in his brain, and that fact terrified Nick Campbell far more than the dark forest he was presently getting lost in. Thomas carefully lowered the would-be combatants to the ground and released his energy grip. To their credit, neither dashed forward and began assaulting the other, though anyone looking at their eyes could see it was only a hair's breadth from happening. In this case, the hair holding it back was the smiling blonde stepping between them.
"Why don't you explain why you two were headed for blows?" Angela said calmly.
"I'm sick of his shit!" Stella yelled. "He was running his mouth again about how women have no place in the battlefield, and I decided to shut it for good."
"To be fair, my exact words were, the only useful power for a woman is one that conjures up food or babies," Roy corrected. "And I was joking around. Someone must be leaking steel blood today."
"I'll show you blood,"
Stella said, taking a step forward. Angela whipped her head around and met Stella's eyes. They stayed like that for only a moment before Stella pulled her foot back to its previous position.
"To make sure I understand, Roy made a misogynist comment about women being weak,
and Stella opted to give him an objective lesson in the incorrectness of his assumptions. Right? Angela asked. They also bickered for a while before it came to blows, a random voice in the crowd volunteered. I'd assumed about as much, Angela said. Okay, then. Have at it. She moved backward.
Wait, what?
Thomas squawked. They're having a legitimate disagreement, and neither of them is going to get seriously injured from duking it out. All I ask is that you take it to the woods so you don't mess up the bus or anyone's tents, Angela said. And by ask, I hope you can infer what I mean. They inferred quite well.
Truce until we're a few minutes out in the woods, Roy proposed.
Fine by me, Stella agreed. I can wait a bit to mess up those pretty boy looks.
Roy snickered, but began heading south into the forest. Stella followed suit, a few steps behind. Silence fell upon the remaining students as the two fighters crossed the tree line and faded from view. Fortunately, it was quickly broken by a cheery tone.
Okie doke, folks. I think it's time for roasting hot dogs, Angela declared.
Vince walked away from the crowd once he was certain the Roy and Stella situation was handled. He had to admit, Angela's solution made sense. They were both hard-headed and weren't likely to give up on the idea of fighting once it had been planted in their brains. That might have been fine if they weren't too strong to stop once they got going. No, the best course of action was to just have them work out their aggression at a safe distance from the campsite. A part of Vince felt like he should have followed along, just to keep an eye on them. Another part felt that he should go after Nick and Alice to make sure they got back safely. The part that won, though, was the piece of Vince's brain that advocated jumping back in the river before either course of action. Putting up the tents had left him sweaty and stained with dirt. He decided he would take a quick dip to cool off, then see which of the situations was the most pressing. Vince walked carefully out toward the river, enjoying the slight serenity of being at least close to alone on the forest path. There was still plenty of noise coming from the campsite, enough that Vince didn't notice the footsteps following his own. Instead, he tried to block it all out and draw in deep breaths of clean air. He'd almost forgotten how much he enjoyed being outdoors on his own. Sleeping under the stars, cooking over an open fire, even rinsing off in a river were all little joys he'd once savored. Joys he was looking forward to indulging in again this weekend. Vince reached the water's edge and splashed forward. He dove under a few times, letting the cool liquid soak his silver hair and run down his back. He waded back up to waist-deep level and turned to watch the sun dip down below the horizon. He took a deep breath and felt several knots of tension flow gently down the river. There was a light splash behind him, and this time Vince heard it. He would have turned around to investigate it, too. The only thing that stopped him was the pair of arms that snaked around his body, locking him in place and squeezing hard on his torso. 125. Nick was lost. He'd come to terms with this fact several minutes ago, and was now in the recovery stage of dealing with such a realization. His first attempt was to retrace his steps back toward camp. However, the sun had slipped away completely, and Nick's tracking ability was already poor. His tracking ability by flashlight was at a level of failure on par with the combination of moonshine mixed with chocolate milk. Had Nick been in this predicament a year ago, his only remaining recourse would have been to start a forest fire and hope someone came to investigate. This was not the Nick of a year ago, though, and he had another option available to him. Nick stopped trying to find his way and focused his luck. He closed his eyes, spun around, and began walking in a random direction, using his flashlight to see, but making no attempts to track his course. Whichever way the trees seemed to break, that was the path he took. It was slow going, navigating the shrubbery in the night, wearing only a swimsuit, sunglasses, and flip-flops, but step by step, progress was made. Nick just wasn't sure about progress toward what. That was the thing no one seemed to get about luck. In a confined sense, it was very predictable, like a dice or card game. Under those circumstances, there were defined outcomes that were positive and negative. Good luck yielded the good results, and vice versa. The larger the scale of the task, the more variables were present, and the more potential outcomes were at hand. Good luck would yield a desirable outcome, of course. However, that didn't guarantee it would be the one he wanted. He was hoping to find his way back to camp, but he could just as easily fall into an undiscovered gold mine or get chased by a bear into the arms of a beautiful woman. Luck, even when you could control the direction it flowed, was unpredictable. That was why he so rarely used his power outside of tightly controlled circumstances. As the sound of a familiar sniffling reached his ears, Nick let out a sigh. Once again, Lady Fortune had heard his plea and then decided to do whatever she damn well pleased to him. Nothing to do but make the best of it. "Alice?" Nick called. "Are you okay?" Her response came from higher than he'd expected. "Nick?" "You got it," he said, waving his flashlight around so she could see him. "It would be you," Alice muttered from the darkness. As Nick squinted into the night, he made out a bikini-clad shape slowly descending toward him. Alice floated down from the tree she'd been perched in and settled at his side. "How you feeling, drunkie?" Nick asked. "A little scared," Alice admitted. "And a lot lost. I didn't mean to walk so far, and then the sun set and I wasn't sure what to do."
15 beers will do that," Nick said, patting her shoulder. "My bet says our friends have lit a fire to cook on by now. Why don't you float over the tree line and see which direction they're in?"
"Okay, that makes sense,"
Alice agreed. She flew carefully upward, trying to dodge tree branches with only a moderate success rate. Once she crested the tops, she could feel the night wind lapping against her skin. It took only a moment to spot the orange glow of her camp. They were a little bit to the north, maybe a 5-minute walk away. Alice let out a sigh of relief and lowered herself back into the trees. She took a few more scratches as she flew toward the beacon of Nick's flashlight. However, she ultimately reached the ground safely.
"Did you see it?" Nick asked.
"I sure did," Alice replied.
"Phew. Okay, princess, you point the way and we can get out of these damn woods," Nick said.
Alice opened her mouth to tell him the appropriate direction, but before she could, something else entirely leapt out.
"No."
"No?" Nick asked.
"No,"
Alice confirmed. her brain, boozy as it was, catching up to her mouth.
I have you trapped in the woods with information you need and no audience. You and I are going to have a talk.
A talk?
A talk,
Alice repeated. Okay, what are we going to talk about? Nick asked.
You,
she said. I guess that works. My favorite food is sushi, favorite color is gold, big fan of horror movies, 15-inch penis, love long walks on the beach. Just tell me when you've heard enough. Nick rambled.
No,
Alice said, waving him off.
I mean, we're going to talk about just what your damn problem is.
Wow, drunk Alice really doesn't pull any punches, Nick observed.
Enough deflecting. I mean it. You act like this intolerable jackass with a never-ending stream of snarky comments and bad jokes. Then, with the flip of a switch, you can become this charming, knowledgeable, really sweet guy,
Alice said, her voice raising a few octaves.
I mean, what the fuck?
Intolerable jackass. You sure know how to sweet talk, Nick spat back. I explained before, the thing with your dad was just an act. I pulled together some crap I saw from movies about high society and did my best. I'm glad it worked, but that doesn't mean there's some super deceptive side to me.
I don't believe you!
Alice's voice crescendoed higher, passing the line of stern talking and entering the realm of the yell.
I know there's more to you than that. Yes, that was the first time I saw it, but I'm not blind, Nick. I've been watching since then, and I keep seeing little snippets of that guy. You can lie all you want, but I'm done being a sucker. I know there's more to you than this.
Nick took a deep breath and steadied himself. He could feel that strange tickle in his brain still, clouding his judgment. Only slightly, but it was growing stronger. He needed to end this discussion quickly. Unfortunately for Alice, that meant going for the throat.
Alice, I'm sorry, Nick said. So you finally admit it?
No, Nick said. I'm saying that I'm sorry you have a crush on the guy I pretended to be. That wasn't what I meant to happen, and I hope you know that.
You think I have a crush on you?
Nick shook his head. No, not on me. On who I pretended to be to impress your dad. You obviously liked him. That's why you think you keep seeing glimpses of him in me. That's why you've developed this radical idea that I've been faking who I am the entire year, instead of just that evening. I mean, really think about it, Alice. Which seems more likely? Alice stared at him, her wide eyes gleaming in the glow of the flashlight.
You're lying. You're lying again.
I wish I was, Alice. Things would be a lot easier. But the truth is that you got enamored with a fictional character.
That's bullshit, Nick. I'm not falling for this.
Falling for what? The fact that you only like a version of me you saw for a few hours at a dinner? A dinner where you knew I was lying the whole time? Or facing the fact that the lie version of me is the only version you've ever been attracted to? A fact I'm trying really hard not to let hurt my feelings, by the way.
Why would that hurt your feelings?
I don't know. Maybe because someone I've spent half a year living alongside, who knows what it's like to grow up with the same defect and climbed a fucking mountain with, had to invent a complex delusion just to find me the least bit bearable. Nick shot back, raising his own voice in turn. You don't see how that might be the least bit shitty for me?
But I know he's you,
Alice said weakly. Nick smiled inwardly. Her hesitation was the sign that he'd successfully sown doubt. He was home free now, All he had to do was wrap things up carefully, and he would put both Alice's affections and suspicions to bed for good. And then, as Nick felt the genuine joy of a well-played altercation mingle with the giddiness from Selena's song, something slipped. "Please, Alice, you don't even know the real me," Nick said. He slammed his mouth closed so hard that his teeth clicked. That hadn't been how he'd meant to phrase it. That said far, far more than he wanted to. Briefly, Nick hoped that in her still addled state of mind, Alice would miss the meaning in those words. One glance in her eyes dispelled all traces of that dream, like a broom sweeping through cobwebs.
"I don't even know the real you," Alice said, some of the conviction returning to her voice.
"That's not what I meant," Nick said, backpedaling quickly.
"Now that, I believe,"
Alice said, a smirk twitching at the corners of her mouth.
"Maybe you're right, Nick. Maybe I've been seeing that version of you because I wanted to. And maybe he's as fake as you claim. That doesn't automatically make this version of you real, though."
"Alice, you're sounding deluded again." Alice silenced Nick with a finger to his lips.
"You just said something honest to me. Possibly one of the very few things that has crossed your lips that falls into that category. Please don't taint it by lying again already. Just give me a few minutes."
Nick looked at her green eyes. The jig wasn't necessarily up, but if he pushed her any harder on this, it very well could be. It was more logical to wait, to let her sober up and hope she had poor drunken recall. And if Nick were being brutally honest with himself, perhaps a part of him enjoyed someone looking at him and actually seeing even a piece of what was really there. Nick simply nodded, unable to trust his tongue not to twist any words that might start with the best of intentions.
"Thank you," Alice said softly. "We can go back to camp now."
She took his hand and began leading him north. Alice came to a halt after only a few steps, though.
"Oh, what the hell,"
Nick heard Alice say, and that was his only warning before a soft, warm body and a clumsy pair of lips crashed against his own. Alice was an awkward kisser, but what she lacked in experience, she was not missing in passion. Nick had spent the entire year trying hard not to notice just how shapely Alice was, and as she wrapped her body around him, his efforts came crashing down. He kissed her back, a flurry of resistance and indulgence as he warred with himself inside. At last, one part pulled ahead of the other, and he pushed her back.
"Alice," he said carefully, "you're a beautiful girl, but this isn't right. You're intoxicated, and I'm seeing someone. We shouldn't do this."
"I agree,"
Alice said, her voice steady, but her breath panting.
"That kiss wasn't for you tonight. It was for the real you."
"The kiss was for the real me?"
"Yep. In case I like him. Because I hope you know that I will meet him one day."
Nick forced out a laugh.
"Whatever you say there, drunkie. Let's head back to camp and get some food to sober you up."
Alice let his comments pass, and instead took his hand once more. She led him swiftly to the camp, though not so swiftly that she didn't get to savor leading him around for once. 126. Vince reacted immediately, his mind racing to analyze the situation. He had no electricity and little fire in his arsenal at the moment, which meant he could flare up quickly and drive off the attacker, but have nothing left for afterward. He was waist deep in water, so any fast movements to break the hold were going to be extra difficult to execute in the way of legwork. That left relying on a swift blow coupled with his flexibility. Vince twisted his right elbow around with all the force he could muster, intent on driving it into the temple of his attacker. It would hurt his shoulder, but unless the assailant had enhanced durability, it would disorient them enough for Vince to slip free. That was the plan, anyway. What actually happened was Vince's well-thought-out attack connected with nothing. All at once, the arms holding him were gone, and Vince was jerking through the water, knocked off balance by the momentum of his failed blow.
"Geez, somebody doesn't like surprise hugs," Sasha said from the shore.
The wake dispersing through the water made it pretty clear just where she'd been standing when Vince was grabbed.
Sorry, Vince said, finding his footing in the water. I thought you were attacking me.
Sasha tilted her head.
That's an interesting assumption to jump to. Got a reason to suspect someone might be out to harm you?
Vince hadn't told her about Michael's Halloween attack, or the constant aggression the boy showed him at every turn. It just hadn't seemed like something she needed to worry about.
Not really. Not today, anyway, Vince said.
He hadn't had an altercation with Michael in months, so there really was no good reason for him to be so jumpy.
Mm-hmm,
Sasha said, walking back toward Vince at a slow pace.
You know, you're lucky your girlfriend has speedy reflexes, or this would be really awkward right now.
Vince paled. He hadn't even thought about that. If he'd slugged Sasha, he would feel absolutely abominable. Sasha laughed.
Oh, relax. I'm kidding around. It was a good elbow, but it wasn't a secret death shot. Worst case scenario, I'd have a bump and some static in my vision for a few minutes.
She reached Vince, the water coming up to her navel rather than her hips. Vince was a few inches taller than she, and as she leaned against his chest, Sasha reflected, for the umpteenth time, on how much she enjoyed that feature.
There wouldn't have been words to say how sorry I was,
Vince said, curling his arms around her.
I know that, silly, Sasha assured him. You're all about keeping the people you care about safe, and you do a great job of it. I never feel safer than when you're holding me tight. Tights, she said, leaning over him. What am I going to do with you?
As she moved, her curly, dark hair tumbled down, dangling only a few inches from his body.
You could start by not calling me that,
Vince suggested. His voice seemed to be caught somewhere in his throat, causing it to come out rougher and lower.
I could, but I won't,
she said. She smiled down at him, and for the first time, the smile could be seen in her emerald eyes as well as on her face.
Worth a shot,
Vince said, returning her grin from his own prone position.
Whew! This water is starting to cool down, Sasha said, breaking their embrace. What say we go get toweled off and warmed up?
Why, Sasha Foster,
Are you asking me to put more clothes on?
I am, though if you have a better warming method, I am quite open to suggestions,
Sasha replied. Vince pulled her back into his embrace and kissed her, running his hand through her hair and holding it tightly. He didn't pull, he just held her there, locking her lips and body against his own. He released her a few seconds later, pulling his face mere inches away.
"That do it?"
Vince asked. He'd meant to sound casual, making light of the intense kiss they'd just shared. His throat felt thicker than normal, and the voice that emerged from it sounded like someone had poured molasses on his usual tenor. Sasha didn't respond verbally. Instead, she leapt up onto Vince's long frame and wrapped her legs around his waist, burying her lips against his. The movement would have knocked most men down, but then most men weren't undergoing daily physical training in the Lander HCP. The affection assault did rock him backward, though, carrying him toward the shore opposite the camp full of other students. Sasha fully expected to get another good kiss, then be set down by her boyfriend as he reminded her that wasn't the type of relationship they had. He took her by surprise instead, scooping his arms under her to get a grip, then carrying her the rest of the way to the shore. They came down at last, falling onto the soft ground a few feet away from the river's edge. They rolled even further inland, bit by bit, a constant rotation of top-to-bottom positioning as they tried to stay comfortable on wet grass. When they finally broke apart, they were far enough from the water to have it obscured from view, but not so far that they couldn't hear its gentle lapping against the shore.
"Whoa,"
Sasha said, catching her breath. Her skin was tingling, and her body was quite far from cold. She tried to steady her mind and trembling hands. She'd promised to be a good girlfriend and wait for when Vince was ready. And she'd meant it, too. He was too good of a guy for her to trade his mental comfort for some fleeting physical fun. That being said, if he kissed her again, there was a good chance she would tear off his swimsuit and tie him to a tree until he found his willingness.
"Yeah,"
Vince agreed. He felt like his whole body had been short-circuited somewhere along the line. Everything seemed sharp and enhanced. Even the wind on his skin was noticeable. At the same time, his brain felt half-fried. All his thoughts seemed to show up simultaneously, then evaporate into silence.
"Sorry about that,"
Sasha said, pulling herself to a standing position. She wanted to rest her head on Vince's shoulder again. However, she didn't trust herself to touch him right now. Not even lovingly.
No, it's my fault,"
Vince said, remaining in a sitting position for certain logistically embarrassing reasons.
"I started it."
Sasha let out a small chuckle.
"Man, how sad is it that we have a crazy good makeout session, and our first response is to apologize to each other for it?"
"Pretty sad," Vince agreed.
"So, let's agree. No more of the I'm sorry stuff. We're boyfriend and girlfriend. We get to make out guilt-free. That's one of the many perks of being together,"
Sasha said. "Along with movie and dinner partners," Vince pointed out.
"Not to mention someone to cuddle with,"
Sasha said.
"And, of course, best of all is that we each get a great friend."
"A very great friend," Vince said.
"All right, then. Logical perks of being a platonic couple. This helping you calm down at all?"
Not really, Vince admitted. Me neither, Sasha said. But we'll get there. Maybe the cold water will help.
You seem pretty determined.
Damn Skippy, Sasha said. I want to be able to get kissy with my boyfriend, even if that means devising all sorts of self-control methods to stop it from going any further.
Or we could let it go further, Vince said. Sasha's skin froze, and her blood turned to fire simultaneously.
What are you trying to say, Vince?
Vince brought himself to a standing position, deciding eye contact was more important than modesty for a moment like this.
I'm saying that you're my girlfriend, and I care a lot about you. And I trust you,
Vince said, cradling her face as he spoke.
And that I'm ready. You sure about that?
No, Vince admitted. But I don't think I'll get to be totally sure. There's some inherent risk in connecting with someone deeply. So I'm not sure that it will all end well, and I won't get hurt. But I am sure that I consider being with you worth the risk, though. Sasha stretched herself upward and kissed him gently on the bottom lip.
I'll be gentle,
she said, with a slight smirk.
Liar,
he replied, kissing her lightly on the nose.
Perceptive boy,
she said. She leapt atop him once more. This time, Vince made no effort at all to stay standing. 127. Roy's punch caught Stella in the sternum, lifting her off the ground and sending her hurtling back several feet. So far, they'd just been dancing, a few light taps here and there. This hit, though, this signaled the beginning of the real match. Stella rolled with the blow as she landed, doing a few spins across the hard, dirt floor of the forest and flipping up onto her feet. Roy idly noted that if she'd weighed the same amount as a normal person, his punch would have easily sent her all the way to the tree line. They were in a clearing about 40 feet across, so that wasn't saying a whole lot, but Roy felt he would have at least appreciated the satisfaction of such a sight.
That all you got?
Stella taunted as she got her footing. Roy's punch had taken some of the breath from her, a fact she was trying to hide by stalling. She'd been caught off guard. Last time she'd seen him fight was at the beginning of the year. Back then, he'd swung wide and blocked minimally. Things had clearly changed in the last few months.
Not even close, Roy replied with a smile.
She was buying time to recover, and he was well aware. Hell, he'd gotten more experience at that than any other aspect of fighting in the time he'd been sparring Chad. Roy had no qualms with letting her catch her breath. He wasn't going to let her win, but that didn't mean he felt the need to utterly crush her. Stella steadied herself and regained control of her breathing. She also took the opportunity to fix the top of her suit slightly. Admittedly, challenging someone to a fight while wearing only a bikini might not have been the smartest move. However, Stella Hawkins had never been one for a tremendous amount of forethought.
Thank God. I was scared I'd get bored,
Stella shot back, moving toward him carefully. Roy began advancing as well, a series of small, careful steps, with his eyes never swerving from her body. In a flash of sunset glinting off steel, Stella dashed forward, faking a right before throwing her momentum into a slide. It carried her through Roy's initial punching range before he could adjust to the shift. Taking advantage of the low position and the opportunity, Stella swept her legs around, striking the side of Roy's knees. They immediately buckled and sent him tumbling forward. Stella readied herself to nail Roy in the torso when he moved to catch himself. Instead, she was caught off guard as Roy threw his right leg in front of him, stopping the descent in a move that would have easily broken the ankle of a normal combatant. Roy pushed off on his heel, reeling against the fall and spinning his body around in time to take a swing at Stella. The punch was too short, but it forced her on the defensive as she scrambled back to her feet. Seconds later, they were circling each other once more.
"I make it a personal goal never to bore a lady," Roy said, flashing Stella his patented smile.
"No, just to infer that we're weaker, softer, and don't belong on the battlefield," Stella replied.
"Am I still inferring? I thought after a certain point it was considered speaking what you were thinking," Roy said.
"That is fucking it," Stella said,
charging forward. This time, she didn't even bother with a fake blow. She just reared back and swung with a hard right. She was positive he'd be able to block it. She just wanted to make sure it would hurt. Roy caught her by surprise once more, though. Rather than try and stop her blow, he lowered his head and met it head-on, with his skull. Stella winced at the unexpected pain, a movement that cost her the chance to see Roy's next move. This was unfortunate, because Roy used his lowered frame and her open right side to catch her dead under the chin with an upward blow. Her eyes flashed with sparks as she was sent sprawling. There was no fancy roll this time, just coughing and clawing at the ground as she tried to regroup. To his credit, Roy made no move to come after her as she recovered, though this only served to agitate her more.
"So what?"
Stella said, spitting on the ground and checking to see if she was bleeding.
"You don't press the attack if the opponent is a girl?"
"Could be. Or maybe I'm just admiring how nice your ass looks when you're crouched like that,"
Roy responded. Stella slammed her fist into the ground and pulled herself up.
"You are one dead motherfucker,"
says the girl who has only landed glancing blows so far.
"I'm warming up,"
Stella lied.
"Sure you are, sugar dumpling," Roy said.
He spread his feet apart and readied for another charge. Stella wasn't the type of opponent one wanted to let catch them off guard.
"Jeez, your parents must have really done a number on you,"
she remarked, as she looked for the best angle to attack from.
"That a fact?"
"Yeah. I mean, for you to hate girls as much as you do, there must be some really messed up shit in your past,"
Stella sniped. Roy blinked in genuine surprise.
"You think I hate girls?"
"Of course you do. You just see us as holes to fuck, not equals,"
Stella said, her own rage boiling over and culminating in another charge. There was no good angle to come at. She could see that clearly. No matter what she did, he'd be able to counter. His headbutt to her fist had inspired her, though. This wasn't a fight in the gym. This was a brawl. She didn't care if he got in some good licks, as long as she gave them right back. Stella slammed her shoulder into Roy's abs, ignoring the two punches he landed on her shoulder when she came in range. She used her superior weight to drive him back, slamming him against a tree before dragging him to the ground. They crashed into the dirt together, immediately rolling around to get on top. Stella had more experience at groundwork, but the previous blows were muddling her head, and Roy's non-metallic frame gave him an advantage in speed. As a result, they soon came to rest, with Roy perched on top of Stella, his knees pinning her chest to the ground. "For the record," Roy said, leaning back to avoid her hand that was clawing at his face, "I don't hate women."
"Sure, you're a goddamn patriot of feminism,"
Stella huffed from her prone position. "Probably not," Roy admitted, "but I don't hate them." Stella stopped struggling for a moment to look up at him. The boy was interrupting a good fight to make this point, so it was clearly pretty important in his eyes. And speaking of his eyes, they actually looked sincere at this particular moment. Stella didn't think she could have ever guessed what sincerity would look like on Roy Daniels, but there it was, plain as day.
"Fine. I'll concede that you don't hate women. You don't think of us as equals, though."
"Agreed. I think you're kinder, smarter, and gentler than men can ever hope to be. And yes, physically weaker and softer. Paint me as an asshole all you want, but that's just how I see it. So I prefer to see women away from the battlefield, safe, where they won't get hurt. Because the world outside of combat needs them far more than it needs men. Especially men like me," Roy explained.
"You realize that's still misogyny, right?"
Stella asked.
"Realize it? I don't even know what it means," Roy said.
"And all the random sex?"
"I'm an adult, so are they. Everybody likes fucking. I'm not apologizing for that one."
With that, he stood up, taking Stella's hand and jerking her to her feet as well. Stella accepted his help and brushed herself off. Much as she hated to admit it, her anger had all but completely ebbed away. Yeah, he was 6 feet and a few hundred pounds of pure dick brain, but his motivations weren't quite as pig-headed as she'd thought. Roy was feeling about the same way.
"Guess we're done with the fight, huh?"
Stella replied by socking him in the ribs. Roy doubled over and began coughing.
"Hell no," she said. "I might not be mad, but I'm still all worked up. Besides, I haven't had a fight this good in a long time, so there is no way I'm letting you go already."
"Fine by me,"
Roy said, coming back up and rubbing his side tenderly.
"I'm good to go all night long."
"Boys and their empty promises,"
Stella said, taking another swing at him as he stepped backward. The remainder of the fight lasted about 5 minutes. The sex that followed lasted considerably longer. 128.
So, day one was, as you've described it here, a hookup bonanza, correct?
"Yes, sir,"
Angela replied.
"I can certainly see how that would happen,"
Dean Blaine said. He turned the page in the packet of documents he was holding.
"Now, the forest fire on the second day. That one will require a bit more explanation."
Ben squirmed around in his chair. The dean's office was plush and comfortable, but having to answer for the actions of a class of drunken supers was worse than sitting on pins made of lava.
"It's really quite simple, sir. You see, some of the students decided to make a campfire at the end of the day. Unfortunately, we were still collecting the tubes, and we had the matches, so one of the students chose to do the job himself."
Dean Blaine cocked an eyebrow.
"Would that have been Mr. Reynolds?"
"No, sir. He actually helped us quell it before it got out of hand. The one who started the fire was Alan Wells,"
Ben said.
"Ah, yes. The young man who can throw explosive balls of energy."
"Yeah,
The idiot figured it would be combustive enough to ignite the nearby wood. Angela scoffed, and he was right.
Indeed he was. The Park Service is none too happy with me about the damage left behind,
Dean Blaine said.
In our defense, we did manage to get it contained very quickly,
Ben pointed out.
You did. I'll give you that,
Dean Blaine said.
Though you were somewhat slower in response to the glacier that now occupies a chunk of the river.
Ben swallowed hard. This was not the way he wanted to spend the first afternoon back from vacation. Nick sat on the couch, watching television and applying lotion to the side of his nose. He'd miscalculated the necessary SPF to defend him all weekend, and was now paying the price. The boy knew a lot about sunshine and desert heat, but less about the sunscreen washing off properties of a river. Alice walked over from the girl's side, clad in tank top, flip-flops, and shorts.
"Son got you, too?" Nick asked perfunctorily.
"Like I owed him money,"
Alice said. She sat down next to him and pulled out her own bottle of lotion, one that was both more expensive and more effective.
"Where is everyone? We've had all morning to rest up. I figured they'd have swung back to life by now."
"They have," Nick said. "Vince left with Sasha a few hours ago, and Mary came in a little after lunch, so she and Herschel took off to catch up and be all couple-like."
"Well, they are sort of a couple,"
Alice noted.
"Thus the word choice."
"Ah,"
Alice said.
"Not to be forward, but would you mind getting the backs of my shoulders?"
Nick hesitated for a moment, then said,
"Okay."
Alice realigned her couch position so her back was facing Nick, then handed him her lotion. She slid the straps of her tank top down to the sides of her arms and pulled her long, blonde hair around front, revealing the bare upper half of her back.
"So, when are you going to see Bubbles next?"
Alice asked, as Nick's hands worked the soothing cream into her skin.
"Probably in a couple of days," Nick said blandly. "I've got stuff to do and whatnot."
"We didn't have any homework over the break. What kind of stuff do you have?"
"You know, just stuff,"
Nick reiterated lamely. He was having trouble conjuring up his usual silver tongue, mostly because he was focusing on keeping his physical tells under control.
Ever since that kiss in the woods, he'd lost his ability to deny that he was physically attracted to Alice. He'd coped with this new development by keeping his distance, but now he was kneading her flesh with his hands, and things were getting more difficult. If Nicholas Campbell had any weakness, it was women.
"Just stuff."
"Okay,"
Alice said, letting it go.
"You know, Nick, about the first night of the river trip, there was something I wanted to say."
A lesser man would have let his hand stiffen in fearful anticipation of what was coming next. Nick may not have been a better man. However, he was a better liar. His fingers never paused, and his voice betrayed nothing.
"And what's that?"
"Just that I wanted to say thanks for coming after me. I don't remember if I ever expressed gratitude. I was pretty drunk, after all. I just wanted to make sure I thanked you,"
Alice said. Nick relaxed a bit internally and got back to the task at hand. So, she didn't remember things too clearly. That would make proceeding from here much easier. Had Nick been sitting a few inches to the left, he would have been able to see Alice's face in a mirror that hung on the wall.
and had he been gifted with that vantage point, he surely would have noticed the wry, cunning smile on her face. Jill was sitting in the central area of their dorm room, reading a magazine. She flipped casually to the next page,